Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to Ace time. Let's get to work in, man. Let's go.
Great day. Great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Let's do it.
In the air, center field. Rojas going back near the wall. That ball's gone. Cooper Hummel. 1-0 Astros. Breaks the pitcher's duel here in the eighth.
How about it, Cooper Hummel? Got that oppo-type juice going the other way.
31,245 standing. Got him! 20 for 20 on the season. Josh Hader closes the door in a 1-0 victory. Josh Hader now fourth in team history and converted saves to start a year. Hader set the mark last year in 2024. There's the hitting star, Cooper Hummel. Blummer, this is a night with not much offense, but just enough late for the Astros.
There you go. Todd Kalas, Jeff Blum on the call. The Astros get the win last night to get this series started off with the Phillies, 1-0. The Cooper Hummel game is what they're going to call it years from now. When you're bouncing your grandkids on your knee and you're talking about, son, back in June of 2025, I tells you, the Astros went 13 games over 500, I say, when Cooper Hummel hit a home run off of a man named Ranger Suarez to right field. Oppo Taco is what they called it back then. 1-0, the Astros win last night. Good morning, Seth. How are you?
Yeah, Cooper Hummel is a great old-time baseball name. That's I'm glad you picked up on that, Sean.
Yeah. Cooper Hummel.
When he hit his home run last week against the A's, which was not as meaningful as this one, he had been out of the major leagues for 988, or between, he hadn't hit a homer in the major leagues in 988 days.
Yeah.
It's an impressive, not as impressive as Lance McCullers in the 17,000 days he spent.
It's almost the exact same number of days between wins for McCullers and home runs for Hummel. It's eerie, that little stretch right there.
It's a little bit of an illustration, though, too, with some of the guys like Cooper Hummel or Guillermo or any of the minor league call-ups have really been an indication of just how thin the Astros pipeline is.
Yeah.
You know, these guys are all veteran acquisitions.
Right. Cooper Hummel's been in the big leagues. Brandon Walter, you know, he spent time with the Red Sox. He's been to the big leagues before. Yeah, I mean, they are piecing it together. This is a really resourceful team. I mentioned this yesterday when I was on Seattle radio a couple days ago. I was on there to talk about Kevin Durant, but they brought up the Mariners and the Astros. And, of course, the Mariners have experienced the whole Astro thing for the last decade. I told the host I was on with, Mark James, that there's a lot of cliches that get brought up when you have a team like the Astros that have had sustained success for a long time. And especially once the talent level starts to dip, where you're like, well, they just know how to win and they've got experience and they're just finding ways. And you say that when it's a good team, it feels like, even when that may not be the case because it's just cliche and you're trying to sound smart, this team actually feels like that's the case. Like, this team actually feels like, wow, they are really – they're not a great team, but they're really good in big moments. They're really good late in games. They're really good late in innings. You know, a lot of two-out runs scored this year, and their pitching is off the charts good this year.
It's a really good point about being late in games because I haven't checked on the stat in a while, but their record when they're tied or have a one-run or a lead in the sixth through ninth innings is when they enter the sixth or seventh inning with that lead or tied. They've been very, very good. Yeah. A lot of that you pin on the bullpen. Mm-hmm. But the potential for this team to be like a better version of what it's been, which isn't a winning baseball team, is I keep checking myself to see if I'm like falsely propping up my hopes for the team by saying, well, yeah, but think about if and when all these guys come back.
Yeah.
If Jordan comes back,
yeah.
If Arrigetti comes back. I think it's objectively the right opinion to have.
Yes.
That this team has performed well in their current dilapidated state. And if you can just get half of the guys who are on the IL back at some point in producing, it's a much better baseball team.
Yordan's the only one on the IL that can impact the offense significantly, and that's where another thing that you and I have been saying comes in. Like, okay, we've both been saying, like, all right, well, Yiner Diaz and Christian Walker can't hit like this all year long. They're not going to be, you know, Christian Walker's OPS as of last night after the game was over is 642. Yiner Diaz's OPS is 649. I'm just wondering where the point comes in the year where we're like, okay, well, these guys just aren't very good, and they're not going to be very good this year. Like, Seth, it's going to be the 4th of July next week. You know, we're halfway through the season right now, and these guys are still in the sixes somewhere and don't look like they're snapping. They give us little teases of snapping out of it.
Yeah.
But the numbers are there. They're not snapping out of it, and Christian Walker strikes out all the time still.
And hasn't been defensively nearly what you were supposed to be getting.
Like, this
guy
looks
like the opposite of a Gold Glove guy. That's been honestly for me the most frustrating thing with Christian Walker is that, all right, yeah, veteran players slump. Veteran players in new situations sometimes struggle. And yet, defensively,
yeah.
What do we always say with Bregman? All right, no matter what he's doing at the plate,
yeah.
He's going to give you competitive at-bats, and he's going to play immaculate defense for you. And Christian Walker hasn't done that.
No.
You're right. I was kind of cherry-picking Yiner's stats a couple weeks ago,
yeah.
And saying, well, since his horrendous start, he's been above average and et cetera, et cetera. He's back down to being below average.
Yeah, he's not been above average enough to get his OPS to 700. That's the thing. Yeah. I mean, there's a reason they were batting 6th and 7th in the lineup last night.
In the month of May, he had a 795 OPS, and that's when it was easy to kind of just take the splits and say, all right, well, since he got out of that dump, but now, the sum total of the season and what he did last year, it's starting to look more and more like this is who Yiner Diaz is and not the really promising stats he had a couple years
ago. Maybe that's the case. Last night, pitching, though, it was just cookie cutter, man. Framber, 92 pitches. A little trafficy, didn't strike out a bunch of guys, had 4 walks, a lot of traffic early in the game. But ultimately seven innings of shutout ball, which is all you can ask for. He got a double play along the way, which he does. Brian Abreu pitches a clean 8th. Josh Hader pitches a clean 9th, strikes out 2 guys. I mean, that's as cookie-cutter pitching-wise as you can get. Here was Joe Espada on Framber Valdez last night.
It was. Both lefties were really, really good. Framber, again, excellent. Got 2 big inning-ending double plays, but I thought he was really good from the very beginning. Tough lineup to navigate. I thought he did a really nice job. Pitch count got up, but he just finds a way to get people out.
Pitch count didn't get that up, though. I mean, 92 pitches in 7 innings is pretty. Now, Framber's thrown an 83-pitch shutout this year, a complete game this year. But it was early in the game where he was walking a bunch of guys.
I
looked at his pitch count in the third inning, like end of the third, and he was still only at like 42 pitches. Like somehow amidst the game where he was walking a bunch of guys, his pitch count was very normal for a guy who goes 7 innings for you on the regular.
Yeah,
you know?
That's where the double
yeah.
plays, and at times with him, you're going to get a first or second swing ground
yes.
out. And that he manages to make it a lot better than it feels or looks at
yep.
times. The one good thing, too, because I felt like all of a sudden I'm banging on Yiner or something after he did some good things last night. The 6th inning was key. I'm trying to remember. Did Paredes have the error first and then the really good play when he threw home, or was it vice versa?
I don't remember the order of it. That play where he threw home, though, was obviously massive in a game that wound up 1-0. That was a hell of a play. Down, you know, that was going to be a fair ball down the line there. That was, I don't remember the order it happened in, Seth. But the Paredes.
Oh
is,
no, it was Christian Walker had that error, the error that put Otto Kemp on first base, and then Otto Kemp made it all the way around to third. Paredes made a great throw home to get him out.
Yeah, that was big. That was big. So the Astros find a way, man. Tonight would be a big one. Colton Gordon. You're looking at this series, and I think, you know, the Phillies are a good team, and I think you're looking at this series probably going, all right, we take 2 out of 3 from the Phillies, home or away. That's a good that is a good series. Tonight's the game that if they win, you feel like you're stealing it. You got Colton Gordon going against their ace in Zach Wheeler. So that would feel like a game where you're where you're maybe stealing one. And then you got Hunter Brown going against a no-namer in the afternoon game on Thursday.
If they can win this series and you win this one was a nail biter, but if you can win this series, the Astros record right now is propped up a little bit by the fact that they face some bad teams over this last stretch, and now they're facing a very good team. And I don't look at those series wins or ties versus bad teams as found money or anything.
No.
I think a couple of them were blowouts, and I really do think that to as you stated, without going into cliches or anything, even Chandler Rome in his Q&A in The Athletic was asked a question kind of on the touchy-feely side.
Yeah.
And Chandler tries to be super objective about things. Somebody asked him about what is it about this Astros culture, and he said, you know, and I love that he did this. He said, I have access to the team, but I don't spend enough time around them to pretend like I really know them.
Yeah.
But there is something different about the culture of this team that when veterans come in, they just gush about how welcoming it is, how much of an influence Altuve has over everybody else. And there is still something left of the core constitution of those Astros teams that had better baseball players, but it was still... it was above and beyond the box scores why those teams were great. There is still something that remains of that DNA.
I see it and I believe it, and I totally Chandler's spot on. I just as you're laying that out, I'm thinking, boy, this sounds like what we talk about with the Rockets, and this sounds like what we talk about with the Texans, like this collective three-headed kumbaya of these three teams. And I'm thinking to myself, yes, it's great. There's no drama. Is this what's best for business for us?
Yeah, sometimes you're like, all right, I can have a few jerks to help me get a championship.
Yeah, right. Or a couple segments on a Wednesday. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, we're going to turn our sports radio show into like one of those feel-goodery type private schools where there are no grades.
Right.
Everybody, it's all about exploring your path and journey in life.
It is pretty wild. Like, and coincidental, I guess. Like, these three teams right now, the Astros, Rockets, and Texans all feel like they've got the behind-the-scenes stuff really kind of sewn down and good, and now they just got to win.
I'm so tired of you framing things in terms of wins and losses, Sean.
I know.
How about the spats? What about the experiences we enjoy along the way?
You sound like Aaron Rodgers yesterday. Right now, I hate him. We'll get to him later in the show. All right. Off and running on a Wednesday, victorious Wednesday for the Astros. They win 1-0 last night over the Phillies. All right, we got some good Texan takes on the interwebs yesterday. We are light on headlines, but strong on content today. Is Nico Collins underrated, or is he so good now he's just rated? And a Houston icon goes big, goes deep, and puts it out there for the Houston Texans. We've got that and a whole lot more coming up for you in the next segment. Stay there.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
From the Mokarem Injury Lawyer Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Hi, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Wednesday. Astros win last night 1-0. We'll talk about that more in headlines in about 20-ish minutes or so. Darius Slay was on a podcast, defensive back for the Eagles, defensive back for the Lions. He's been one of the better defensive backs in the league over the last several years, and was asked who's the most underrated wide receiver in the league. He arrived at Nico Collins, but then ultimately realized Nico's not underrated anymore.
Who's the most underrated receiver? So
a good bit of those now. The most underrated one, I feel as in, that's who I went up against one time that had, like, I was like, oh, man, this man got some stuff to him. But, dang, at that time, he was who he is now. Nico Collins was so underrated to me.
He's not underrated anymore, I feel
not
like.
Not no more. That's
maybe
I
year
said.
One,
like,
though.
He's the first one that came to my mind was like,
What is it about his game that makes him so good in your
mind? Like, the fact that he's big, he can run, and his, like, his routes look like he's running at, like, he's 5'8". You know, so, like, he can stop on a dime. Like, he was very underrated for a minute, but now it's like he's where he's at. But
he might run the best dig in the NFL, I feel
like. I'm telling you, like, he get up out the breaks, and like, when he catches, he gets vertical, crazy.
Yeah.
He gets his vertical size,
6'4", the breakaway, yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah, and he running past a lot of guys. Yeah. Like, he run past them, big boy post, like, you wouldn't think it. So, he was my real true underrated, but now he's who he is, so he's not really truly underrated no more.
Yeah, so yeah. I the part I love about that, Seth, is his routes look like he's 5'8". Basically, he's saying the dude moves and looks like a slot receiver when he's getting into his routes.
It was one thing last year during training camp that was really evident, where you could see, even though the Texans' offense wasn't getting, like, clicking the way you'd like to see during training camp, that when he sits down on a breaking route or on a stop or something, that's where he moves like he's 5'8". The same way his tiny little slot receiver types can just kind of zuzu pet their way all over the place. For a big guy, he does that really, really well. And then the kind of the stress factor that it puts on a defensive back when you've got a guy that's big, who's that big and that fast, is that he's coming at you like a straight, like a freight train on something that looks like it might be a vertical route, and you got to prepare for that, and all of a sudden, boom, he's down. And yeah, the size and his ability in the run after the catch, particularly in the playoffs and at the end of the season when he just seems to go into a different beast mode type.
Yeah.
Everybody's taken note of that. I think it's almost what I would worry about is you almost sometimes people get talked about being underrated so much that they become overrated.
Yeah.
And with Nico, the biggest obstacle still is, yeah, he's got to string together a complete season. He's got to just play 17 games and you'll be established as a top three wide receiver in the league.
Yeah, the most games he's played in a season was his breakout season in 2023. 15 games, but the caveat that he went out of that Jets game like five snaps into the game, so he really only played 14 games. Similarly, he played 12 games this past year. Well, he only played a quarter of the Bills game. Of course, he had almost 100 yards on one play in that game. That's what's interesting to me, Seth. When I saw that too, it was Mina Kimes, by the way, who was doing the podcast with him, with Darius Slay. That was the interesting thing to me because the eye grabber on the tweet is most underrated wide receiver, and you see they're talking about Nico, and I'm like, man, I'm thinking to myself, I don't think Nico's underrated anymore. Any power rating or graphic you see on social media that lists the best wide receiver, you know, here are the 10 best wide receivers. Nico is in there, and a lot of them, he's like 5 or 6. And to me, that, like, you're right. Like, that's the opposite of underrated because he's only, I don't think if you're putting Nico Collins in any sort of power ranking with wide receivers, you're counting his first two seasons at all. Like, he was on bad teams that were unproductive, and he was obviously a different guy then than he is now. Any power ranking of Nico Collins amongst the great wide receivers in the league today is all based on 2023 and 2024. And the fact of the matter is he's only played 27 games in that patch of, you know, in that patch of time right there. And which is when you look at the other names that are around him there, it really is remarkable that he's gotten and garnered this much respect in the league with that small a body of great work, because he's alongside guys like Ja'Marr Chase, who's been doing it since the day he set foot in the NFL 5 years ago, Justin Jefferson since the day he set foot in the NFL 5 years ago, Tyreek Hill, who's been doing it for a long, long time, CeeDee Lamb came in 2020. Nico Collins is viewed by the experts out there as among the 5 or 6 best receivers in the league, and he's done it basically on 27 games.
If I had to go for most underrated, I might have to unpopularly put Brian Thomas Jr. from the Jaguars into the mix, just because he's I need to play more fantasy, I suppose, but what he was able to do as a rookie on a bad football team, mm-hmm. It gets lost a little bit in the shuffle of the AFC South. That's where some of the early season matchups for the Texans with this schedule, right off the bat versus the Rams, all right, they've got Puka Nacua, you've got Nico Collins.
Yeah.
Two of the most promising young receivers in the game.
You've got Devontae Adams now, too, by the way. The Rams,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, 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 yeah. And then you also, that week one matchup, the biggest weakness that everybody was focused on in the offseason for the Texans is that offensive line. and they're going against one of the absolute best young defensive players in the league, and Jared Verse. They got Fisk, the draft pick from last year. Their front seven is going to be a real challenge versus that Texans offensive line. The Rams game, in a perfect world, I'd rather see the Rams like third or fourth game of the season, but you're going to learn a lot about just how far along the Texans are in their reset or rebuild offensively against that Rams defense.
God, I'm looking at Brian Thomas Jr. was third in the league in yards receiving last year.
It went
Jamar Chase, Justin Jefferson, Brian Thomas. By the way, all three LSU guys. Yeah. The top three receivers in the league, all LSU guys.
I think you watch him versus the Texans last year, or just, yeah, I was watching some film of him yesterday. Yeah, this guy totally suffered from the fact that he was playing for the Jaguars and the fact that the Jaguars are in the AFC South.
Yeah.
Because they're just not hitting a lot of highlight reels during the week. They're not playing in a lot of meaningful games.
Nope. That's interesting. Underrated. Nico, I don't think is underrated anymore. I think of a guy like Terry McLaurin from Washington, who's been doing it for years, but just finally was doing it on a team last year that mattered. You know, a guy like that. But man,
Terry McLaurin might be one of those guys that gets talked about as overlooked or underrated or et cetera, so long that maybe he's become overrated.
Maybe he has, man. That's how it works. That is how it works.
That's the old nose tackle conundrum.
Mm-hmm.
I was going through one season, and this is what happens with nose tackles. If the defense is playing well, oh, that guy is the unsung hero. If the defense is playing poorly, they need a hoss in the middle there. I can't believe
guys a sieve.
Yeah, can't believe they're getting run on and dimed where the nose tackle is going to the bathroom on the sideline. But yeah, there's a danger in becoming so underrated that you're overrated.
That's true. It is true. Parker McCollum, Houston area legend, country music star. And regular on the Pat McAfee show. He was on the Pat McAfee show yesterday making big, bold predictions for your Houston teams.
I have a feeling that the Houston Texans and the Houston Rockets and possibly the Houston Astros are all going to have a ring with another ring for the Astros here very soon.
Wow.
Now, I don't know if that's this season, but I know this football team has the makings of they're so close to being a really, really, really sound, competitive football team. And they've been right there the last 2 years. Last year struggled, I think, kind of expected with CJ coming off such a high rookie year and just a record-breaking rookie year. But I think once he settles in, and I think he's going to play like a veteran quarterback like he did his rookie season, I don't know who in the world is going to play on the offensive line, but we may be so good that we don't even need one.
Hey, there you go. I like that.
We don't even need an offensive line.
He just
I like that. The old David Carr commercial.
Oh, yeah, with nobody there.
That's how good we were. Yeah.
Parker McCollum just gave all of us permission to call it a potential golden age of Houston sports.
A golden age of Houston sports. It's, Parker McCollum knows how well that's aged.
That's what it is.
I'm known for my country singing ability. Does McCollum do? Does he do as much with the team? I think he's been out. He's carried the flag
once or
twice.
He's very Houston on social media.
Oh no. I'm thinking about as far as actually working with the team itself.
I feel like
the team made a concerted effort to move away from like leaning into the Clay Walker type stuff as much and being more like, hey, let's appeal to the youth.
They've modernized
a lot of the local hip hop guys and legends have been very much embraced. I feel like I was watching Nico when he's on the Greenlight podcast.
Mm-hmm.
He mentioned going to the rodeo and how much fun he had, and he mentioned one of the country singers, I think, as a concert he got to go see.
Yeah.
I feel like, hey, listen, let's remember, like, these kids listen to everything these
days. Yeah, it's a crossover hit, man.
Just bring over, you don't have to step 400% away from what you were in the early days, which felt like some of their PR efforts in the first couple decades felt like trying to appeal to the middle-aged dudes and everything.
Yeah.
You can appeal to everybody.
They have modernized and broadened their horizons, no doubt about that. No doubt about that. George Kittle and Travis Kelce, I think, and one other tight end, I can't remember who, they do this tight end U every year, this big collection of tight ends come into one spot.
Yeah, it's really annoying.
Yeah. They do. And they do drills and they have fun and ESPN is out there. George Kittle sat down, I think this is with Dan Orlovsky, and curious your thoughts on this, Seth, that the good teams have tight end rooms that are great.
I would say one of my favorite things to look back on is if you look at the past, like, 10 Super Bowl winners, every team has either a Gronk, a Kelce, Dallas Goedert. Like, you have an elite tight end playing that makes plays for you throughout the whole season, throughout the playoffs, throughout the Super Bowl. You have guys that make plays. And so I just think guys saw, you know, Gronk and the Patriots win all these championships. Right? You know, we need to invest a little bit more time in these tight ends, maybe get them some more ops. So I just think offenses have seen success of other teams using their tight ends so much. And now they're like, oh, we're going to try using them too. And now you see all these tight ends from every team. You know, the Ravens have a great tight end room. They got, what, Charlie Kolar, Isaiah Likely, and Mark Andrews. Like, three great tight ends. Yeah. And, like, so you building these rooms of the tight ends. Now you can go 11 personnel, 12 personnel, 13, 22, all these personnels with multiple tight ends, and that's the best way to play the game.
Okay, does George Kittle's theory hold water?
As Goddard, I guess him using the word great so liberally, I think, is probably the issue.
That's a pet peeve. That's a pet peeve of mine, too.
Yeah, I would say Dallas Goedert is a very solid tight end, and a guy who benefits from being on that offense as well. So the Eagles have Dallas Goedert. I don't – do you call him a great tight end? I don't think so, but I think he's a very, very solid tight end.
Yeah.
So that I can get with that, in that part of it is you got to at the very least have tight ends who can take advantage of the other guys on the offense and be kind of fit in. It, you know, Owen Daniels was he a great tight end? He was – Owen was an awesome teammate and a really, really effective tight end. I don't know if he was great – but he was very, very effective, and he knew exactly how to fit into the offense. So he ended up being, like when he was with the Broncos, part of a Super Bowl winning effort.
Yeah.
So you know, depending on how you use the word great, I don't know, but you definitely need to have somebody who's very, very effective.
Well, like when you bring up names like Kelce and Gronk, it goes beyond them being tight ends. They're just great football players. You
know,
like you have to have a Gronk on the team or a Travis Kelce. Oh, you're telling me that helps? That helps win a Super Bowl. To me, I like the example of Baltimore that he brought up, because he brought up a room that has fully capable guys, like not great, but like capable guys in that room. And that's that Texans team. Not just Owen Daniels, like Joel Dreesen was very good and did his job for that team. James Casey did some good things for those teams. Like, it was a deep room.
And with if you look at the Ravens, who you know, they're there at the end of the season at least. Yeah, it's Mark Andrews and Isaiah Likely, two different, slightly different skill sets, different types of guys. So having some diversity and having multiple effective guys is big. That's where Brevin Jordan's a little bit more of an X factor. You always have to remind yourself, oh wait, yeah, Brevin Jordan doesn't get used frequently, but they figure out ways to, when he's the gadget or when he's the thing in a specific matchup that you can really, really use. And then if you get the same version of Dalton Schultz from a couple years ago, you can see that being part of a really effective offense.
You just answered my next question, which is how do you think, and I'd add Cade Stover in there, did some really good things in OTAs and minicamp as well. Like, I think this is a room that has room to improve off of last year. It was not a great room. The Brevin Jordan dynamic you're talking about, what we saw to him, that was with guys like Pep Hamilton and Bobby Slowick coordinating the offense when Brevin Jordan, you know, now it's, you know, I'd like to think Nick Caley is going to have some really creative ways that he uses Brevin Jordan in the offense this year.
I have a weird, my more underrated offensive coordinator is Pep Hamilton. I got very frustrated with him at times during that season, and yet at the same time, I'm like, I don't know. What are you supposed to do with these guys?
Dude.
I don't know. He had
zip ties around his wrist.
I know. The fact that, I'm watching Davis Mills, turn down wide open receivers versus vanilla coverage to hit a shorter route or something. I'm watching all these things, and I'm wondering what exactly is Pep Hamilton supposed to do with these guys.
Yep.
I guess the play calling could be better, but my God. But at least Dameon Pierce, we saw the best version of Dameon Pierce.
We did indeed. All right, let's get to headlines coming up next. Astros win last night. We've got some injury updates as well for the Astros that we will get to. Some NBA news and some Texan legend childbirth news as well, announced on social media yesterday. We'll get to all that in headlines coming up next.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses like Rise Bakery connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines presented by Men's Tea Clinic.
In the air, center field, Rojas going back near the wall. The ball's gone! Cooper Hummel! 1-0 Astros! Breaks the pitcher's duel here in the eighth.
How about it, Cooper Hummel? Got that oppo-type juice going the other way.
Todd Kalas, Jeff Blum on the call, Space City Home Network. You could hear it in Kalas' voice, Seth. Like, that thing kind of just kept going and going. Like, off the bat, I mean, it was opposite field, so inherently off the bat, it looks, you know, it doesn't look like your typical moonshot. But I don't think Kalas off the bat expected that thing to go out, and then to everybody's pleasant surprise, it went out, and the Astros win 1-0 last night.
Yeah, that's sort of the, maybe that might be the biggest thing, that the difference between watching in person and watching on television is on some of those balls like that. Mm-hmm. You just have no idea. You're taking all your cues from the commentators and everything
totally.
As a viewer, but you really have no idea. You can't see where the outfielders are set up initially and all that. But yeah, Cooper Hummel came up huge. This is one win down of my. I'm trying not to be overly ambitious here, Sean. I don't need to sweep the Phillies or anything like that. But if you just win this first series as you face this stretch of series where you've got the Dodgers, you've got the Guardians, like it thickens up here over the next few weeks. This very scrappy bunch of do-gooders just keeps doing all the scrappy do-gooding stuff.
Yeah, the Cubs later this week. That's the two series this week at home, the Phillies and the Cubs.
Yeah.
I mean, if they win both those series, you're laughing. I mean, that's a good week. If you take 4 out of 6 from the Phillies and Cubs, that is a massive win this week.
Like I said, I'm not trying to be overly ambitious. Yeah. All I'm asking for is for Kyle Tucker to go 0-for in the series.
Yes.
And for Cam Smith and Paredes to hit, I don't know, is it 3 or 4 games? How many games?
Three-game series with the Cubs.
3 games, yeah. Okay. I'd say 9 home runs
between the two of them. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I like that.
Oh, that would be the best thing in the history of the world.
If there was a difference in the performance of the two, that would be fun, you know, coming in on Monday after something like that for sure. Here was Joe Espada, speaking of Cooper Hummel, and Mauricio Dubon's been great of late too, and he was flashing some leather last night. Here was Joe Espada on the contributions that the team is getting from some of the lower end of the order guys.
Yeah, I feel it's the next man up mentality. It's like everyone finding a way to help win games, man. That's good. Teams do that, and we need that. It's contagious. Those guys in there, they want to be in the game. They look at me like, when am I going to get my spot so I can try to, you know, I could do something to help and contribute. And I love that about this team.
Yeah, top to bottom. It's been this way all year. Like the back end of the order, like 6 through 9. Has been the catalyst for, I mean, last night was a 1-0 win, so it's not like they were knocking the ball all around the yard, but the one run they got was from a guy who wasn't even on the team a week ago, you know, in a 1-0 win.
I mean, the team right now, I try to gauge it emotionally by, like, if they get brought up in trade discussions or potential trade discussions, just as people are spitballing at this time of year about who might get traded. Chandler Rome in his Q&A, it's a really good Q&A on The Athletic. He had answered a bunch of questions, but he was just kind of openly discussing the potential trade targets. And he said, you know, Dubon and Myers are potential trade pieces, but he's very doubtful of it. But even seeing their name in print, I'm like, no.
Yeah.
You look at the scrappy do-gooders and their ability to win right now, Mauricio Dubon especially, and then Jake Myers, just because, boy, if you're looking at it calm, cool, and collectedly, if you're the Astros, you look at Jake Myers, he's playing the best he ever has.
Yeah.
He's got 2 years of control left. That might be an enticing trade piece that some other team out there might overpay based on his career experience.
Yeah.
But I think the Astros might look at the actual changes that Jake Myers made in his approach this year, and then also the fact that he was struggling to come back from a shoulder injury for a couple seasons. And I think they might value him higher than any other team out there. They might really genuinely believe in this version of Jake Myers.
You know, I've not been a huge Jake Myers guy, so me
because
saying...
Because you hate purity and innocence.
Let me finish. Me saying what I'm about to say is significant here.
Yeah, I just wanted to establish that you hate him because he looks innocent and pure, just like you, Mauricio Dubon.
Thank you for the preface. I don't get cute, Astros, if that's the case. If Jake's name is coming up in things, it has taken them 5 years to get center field straightened out since George Springer left. I know Chaz had his period of time there where he was doing some good things a couple of years ago. Jake looks like he's going to be, at the very least, a solid overall average center fielder, which is a massive step up from where he had been. So don't get cute. You finally got, to a degree, you've got center field figured out enough. Go figure out the other problems that you've got going on right
now. Regardless, so he's brilliant as an actual fielder in center field.
Yes.
And regardless of how you feel about him and what his upside is, he's been about a little bit below average at the plate over the course of the last three seasons.
Yes.
So it's like that. That part of it, just with some more consistency, you see how valuable he is. Yeah, the fact that when Chaz McCormick's name is brought up as a potential trade piece, I'm kind of like, oh, yeah.
You forget he's even on
Chaz
the team.
McCormick.
Yeah,
you forget. Yeah, the difference between those two over the last couple of years has been huge.
Yeah, Sean Dubin is going to the 15-day IL with a forearm strain. Now, Matt Kawahara of the Chronicle tweeted that Dubin doesn't think it's a major deal or anything like that. He hopes to be back in the second half of the season at some point. I don't know. Any forearm strain with the Astros, I'm just waiting for the other shoe to drop.
That's a tough thing. When the player himself says it, Sean Dubin, I think, is being honest. I don't think it's like the organization where they're trying to withhold information.
I agree.
But sometimes with these injuries, they don't actually hurt all that much, you know? Yeah. I've seen guys tear their ACL that thought they were just fine afterwards.
Right,
you just flat out don't know until you get all the reports back.
Fingers crossed, because Dubin's been good this year. You know, he's really come into his own as a middle reliever. Spencer Arrighetti reported to Florida to start building back to getting into games. Luis Garcia threw a live BP yesterday, Seth. That's good to see. 20 pitches. And here we go. Get celebration queued up there, Colin. Yordan Alvarez on Sunday. How did this news stay secret? Yordan Alvarez, Seth, hit off a tee.
Mm.
He's basically a six-year-old right now.
And he was scheduled to be in the batting cage yesterday.
Yeah.
I didn't see any updates on that or not. But assuming there's no setbacks or discomfort.
Yeah.
Or it turns out, oh, wait. He's actually, the hand is 69% healed. We have to wait another percentage point.
I was going to say, he must be at least 83% healed.
Yes.
If he's swinging a bat and getting into the cage now.
They've gone from being wrong in that he was 100% not injured to, oh, no, he was 0% healed.
Yeah.
To where now they can say, oh, no, he's actually 72%.
Yeah,
healed.
He's in the 70s and 80s somewhere. So there's your injury updates for the Astros.
So hitting off a tee. Yeah. Next up is the little league pitcher.
Coach pitch.
About 10 feet from him.
Yeah.
And if Yordan can't hit it on the first few, then he gets to go back to the tee.
Right. That's how that goes. Those are the rules.
Imagine being a little league coach lining up 10 feet away from Yordan.
Jeez.
And trying to throw the ball softly.
I can't imagine being a human lined up 60 feet away from Yordan.
Yeah.
So he'll
some of those ones that got hit at Ranger Suarez last night.
I know.
Yeah. There were reminders. Yeah. I don't want to be a major league pitcher ever. My wildest fantasies. So I want to go back and be a major league pitcher.
He was like an NHL goalie out there. Hey, congrats to the Watt family. J.J. Watt, his wife Kalia, they had their second baby back on June 14th, but they announced it on social media yesterday. That's the official birthday that society is giving to Nico Benjamin Watt June 24th, because that's when it got announced on social media.
That's when they put it on the celebrity baby birth certificate.
That's right. June 14th, 2025. It looks like everybody is healthy and happy, and their older son, Koa, a nice picture of him, giving his new baby brother a smooch on the forehead, so the two bros are getting along right now. It's great to see. So congrats. That's great. Two boys. That is good. Two boys that will have NIL deals, I would say, within the next 5 or 6 years.
How big's Koa? Can you see? Is he big for his age?
I've heard JJ talk about it. He's apparently massive for his age.
whose kid was Tony Baselli's first kid?
Yeah.
Because Tony's a big human being. Mm-hmm. You know, he's like JJ. He's even larger when you meet him in person than you realize. And his son was like, the first time I met him, I thought he might have some challenges or difficulties, because he was like 2 years old, but he was the size of a 6-year-old.
Yeah.
But he's walking like a 2-year-old.
Yeah.
And my first thought was like, oh, I wonder what's going on. Like, this, he's perfectly healthy and capable.
This poor
and everything.
First
yeah.
grader he's is just, moving. Yeah, yeah. Why is that big, huh?
Yeah, he was monstrous.
How old is he now?
He played at Florida State, I think.
Did he? So okay.
He's graduated already. Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha. All right, so congrats to the Watts. Nico Benjamin Watt. is the newest member of the family. All right, up next, into the 7 o'clock hour we go. What was our beef with each of the big acquisitions the Rockets have made? We'd spent a lot of time this week comparing the Kevin Durant trade to the acquisitions of Dwight Howard, Chris Paul, and Russell Westbrook, all of whom we had beef with before they became Rockets. We had beef with Durant, too. How quick did we put aside the beefs with these guys? And is Kevin Durant's situation similar or different than all three of them? We'll dig into that coming up next.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.